Hello, everybody. J.J. Cooper, Jeff Ponce, another of the Baseball America Prospect Podcast. And once again this week, we are in the middle of our Fix It series, where we're looking at organizations who haven't been winning a whole lot, and then asking the question of, okay, how far away are they, and what are some things they can do to get back to success? And when we talk about the Pittsburgh Pirates today, Jeff, I think we should define success. Because obviously success for every team out there is win a World Series. But in the case of the Pirates, I think that success also is being relevant and going to playoffs and ideally even winning playoff games. Because to just set the stage here, this is an organization that since Barry Bonds left after the 1992 season, long before many of the people watching or listening to this were even born, since then they've had four winning records in 33 seasons. And one of those was, I believe they won 82 games. Maybe it was 83, but I think it was 82. So other than the 2013, 2014, 2015 stretch, and then that 2018 team that also had a winning record, they've had losing records in every other season since. This is an organization that plays in a beautiful ballpark, but the team that plays in it has very rarely lived up to it. It is something that I would say there is a fan base there that wants to embrace a team and hasn't had a team to really embrace in a very, very, very long time. As you look at it, great to see you again, as always. Like, what is it that's kind of like the defining feature of Pirates teams over the last many, many years? Losing?
I mean, losing, but I think just a lack of offensive firepower. We have seen like a lot of good pitching come through this organization. You know, obviously Gerrit Cole and sort of that whole wave. You know, Joe Musgrove was pretty good here, and that was pretty good a few years right after he was then traded to the Padres. Of course, we have Paul Skeens, Jarrett Jones, Bubba Chandler, and there's other pitching talent.
Jameson Taillon was really good, you know, as was solid.
Yeah, you know, they've always been able to develop a starter or two and then been able to trade those guys for something. I think the bigger question mark with them, though, is have they really been ever been able to put together a consistently good lineup? The few years that they did in Andrew McCutchen's prime seasons, they did. You know, they had a good lineup, and they were a competitive team, and it's the best this organization has been pretty much throughout my lifetime. And I just sort of missed the prime years of those really fun 70s Pirates teams. So, you know, for most of my lifetime, outside of a handful of seasons, this has been a pretty bad organization and a bad franchise. And, you know, I think there's a lot of good. I think we'll talk about that. But, you know, the overwhelming, overarching point in terms of the lack of success, I think, falls squarely on ownership and Bob Nutting and his lack of investment within this team.
I think that is absolutely the story that you kind of have to start with here. This is a team that quite simply, it's never going to be a big spending team. I think that also the Pirates have become, I think that there's a lot of, when I hear from Pirates fans about the need for a salary cap and the need for, like, you cannot win if you don't have a salary cap. And the reality of it is no, we have many, many examples of teams who have success. You can argue that you can't win as sustain winning as like the Dodgers do, maybe. But when you look at the Royals and the Guardians and the Rays, and we could keep going down the list, there are a lot of teams, the Brewers to some extent. The Brewers do not have a market where you say, oh, well, the Brewers are just clearly in a different financial landscape than the Pirates should ever be. No. This is something where the Pirates, yes, they don't spend a ton of money, but it is really hard to point to a sustained stretch in many, many years where the Pirates have really tried. Other than that, like you said, that 13, 14, 15 stretch, they did some really good things then. And then when that team fell off, it really fell off very quickly. And I would say also with that, like, so we say the ownership, like, we're going to get into this. Part of what we're going to get into today, when we say, how do you fix the Pirates? It's an ownership issue. And that involves spending money. because we're not saying that, well, here's our plan for how if the Pirates spend $250 million, you know, they could really turn this thing around in a year. Well, no, they're not going to spend, the Pirates are not going to have a $250 million payroll. But at the same time, it is something about saying how judiciously using the free agent market, figuring out, like, I will start with this. Okay, this is the thing we will start with before we get into strengths and weaknesses. Because the biggest strength of this current team, we could say it's the pitching, but I would say the biggest strength is the Pirates, as we record this, he hasn't been announced yet, but I would expect that we're going to hear this week that Paul Skenes has won his first Cy Young Award. Very likely. They have the best pitcher in the National League.
This episode of FT is brought to you by Square. Your favorite neighborhood spots run on Square. Give me an example in Pennsylvania, Kratz.
Right down the street from my house, the Tap House. Not only is it an awesome place to hang out, get your beers, get your drinks, whatever it is, but you know what? The company has the simplicity of Square, and they give back to the community with 10% of all the proceeds that they bring in, going back to community projects.
I love it. Sports and sports bars are so good at bringing together local communities, and you can actually take this ad as an excuse to go support your local spot and have yourself a day or a weekend in the neighborhood. Square is a proud partner of more than 4 million neighborhood businesses around the world. These businesses are what make the neighborhood the neighborhood. So visit square.com/go/foul to learn more. But before you do, go support your favorite neighborhood spot. You'll be happy you did. Square. See you in the neighborhood. Again, that's square.com/go/foul to learn more.
If you said, like, as great as Yoshinobu Yamamoto was in the postseason, and he's really good in the regular season too, if you said, who is the pitcher, really, if you said in baseball, who's the pitcher you would want to have right now? Paul Skenes throws as hard as almost anybody, but he does it with a precision. I want to give, Bailey over at Foolish Baseball had a piece YouTube video recently that was really good about this. That just kind of laid out. It's like, this is a guy who has top tier stuff, who also has Greg Maddux like savvy and control and command too. You put that together and you dominate. And that's what Paul Skenes does. And I would say, I don't think that there's any scenario in any way, shape or form where if I was a Pirates fan or if I was a Pirates front office, that success and what going forward does not involve having Paul Skenes on this team for multiple more years, many more years to come. Because let me just remind you that Paul Skenes is signed right now, will not be a free agent. He is there for the 26, 27, 28, and 29 seasons. There is no reason to be even thinking or talking about, in my mind, any reason to not say, okay, our starting point of this is we have an ace. We have a true number one starting pitcher, and we're going to build around that, not build by trading that away. The pitching is great, but it all kind of starts here with Skenes, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a great place to start. If we did a fantasy draft with every team, I think he's probably going within the top three picks. I think it's Ohtani, and then, all right, do you want Judge? Do you want Skenes? And Skenes is younger, right? I mean, I think that's how teams would approach it. So there's as much value there as there is with just about anybody in the game right now.
So when you look at the rest of this, though, what are the strengths of this Pirates team?
It's the pitching right now. There's probably enough talent within the pitching prospects, etc., to cobble together a decent bullpen. I mean, if you look at the stats just on their face last year, the rotation was pretty good. Pitching was not an issue for the Pirates. They can't score runs. So, you know, the pitching side of things is pretty good, and the farm system is really, really strong. I don't see, like, there's no reason to necessarily, say that neither of those areas are strengths, because I do think there's some stuff coming in the farm, and the pitching was really good last year as well, but the hitting has just been atrocious.
And that's where I think everything kind of starts here. And that's where we're going to really dive into, is when you look at this, it is kind of a bifurcated organization where I would say there was, if you went back 8 years ago, you would say that the pitching was getting a little bit outdated. I would say that we also have to credit the Pirates were kind of front of the market. They were bleeding. They were leading edge, at least when it came to shifts, when it came to sinkers and pitching into shifts and all in the 13, 14, 15 range. At the same time, I would say that the problem they ran into then is they kind of stuck with that, even as the game kind of shifted back to, oh, sticky stuff and four seamers up and all. And they kind of fell behind. And I think that they realized that they fell behind. And now they've kind of caught up again on the pitching side. I would say that, you know, there was a period of time where you look at Mitch Keller's kind of up and down, you know, Quinn Priester was a first rounder for them and kind of struggles he had and all. Like, there was a stretch there where it wasn't that many years ago. I don't think you would have said that the Pirates were really in good shape as far as pitching development, would you?
No, I think it was the opposite. They held on to some of those Ray Searidge philosophies for a little too long. The game adjusted to that. And, you know, I don't like to quote Moneyball very often. It's a great work of fiction in many instances. But I do think the adage adapt or die is very important in baseball, right? If you take one thing away from that movie, it should probably be that. And, you know, the things that we've seen adapted to over the last 15 years, there's been cycles back and forth to the four seamers. And now it's going back more to two seamers and just different variations on pitch mixes. But I think it's not the same as it was under the Searidge age of sinkers, right? Things have evolved and just understanding the type of traits and things that make certain pitchers successful. And it's not a one size fits all philosophy, which I think it was a little bit in the four seam and the previous sinker age that we saw. But some of the things I just hear internally in terms of things they're doing with grips and some of that stuff, there's a lot of interesting stuff that maybe hasn't surfaced publicly that's going on with the Pirates. They've had some talented folks in their front office. Now retaining those people and, you know, making sure that all the needed resources are available, I think are a little bit trickier. I don't necessarily think it's the front office's fault, a lot of this stuff. I think they're dealing with, you know, a lack of resources in certain areas that probably is most comparable to the Pirates, frankly. I mean, to the Rockies in terms of how the Pirates operate.
So, okay. That kind of jumps into when we talk about the pitching, when we look at the pitching for the Pirates, it's not just schemes, right? This was a good staff, a pretty solid staff last year. And that's with Jared Jones being out. We saw Jared Jones and what he could do 2 years ago. You saw Bubba Chandler arrive at the end of the year as well. Like when you look at this rotation right now and you say that going into 2026, this is a team that currently is projected to have Paul Skenes, undeniable ace, Jared Jones back, Bubba Chandler, Mitch Keller, who's still under contract through 28, I believe, and throw in at the fifth starter spot, we could throw a wide array of names at that. Braxton Ashcraft, Hunter Barco, Thomas Arrington, a list of guys who you could say are plausible in that fifth starter. I would say Barco would be the one that I kind of would start with there, but you may differ. You could, you know, disagree. I think that there's enough guys there also to say that there should be some bleed over into the bullpen, you know, with this as well. The bullpen, I would say, that is still a spot also where the Pirates can kind of do a little bit of experimentation. 26, they're not expected to win the World Series, kind of try to help fashion and carve out some guys there. How do you see it? Like when you look at this pitching staff now, it's got some present, but like, who do you like when you look at some of the names coming up and all, who really kind of like, what does this rotation look like to you? If the Pirates are going to have success, you know, let's say, especially 27, 28, that kind of range.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're hoping for, you know, a top four of Skenes, Keller, Chandler, and Jared Jones in some way, shape, or form. Braxton Ashcraft and Mike Burrows probably both factor into that. Mm-hmm. Burrows had a better year than I think a lot of people realize. I think both Burrows and Ashcraft could play in the bullpen. And then, you know, they have a decent sort of clump here of guys in the upper minors who can provide some depth. Johan Oviedo is 27, had a better year, I think, than people realize. And especially like down the stretch, had a couple of rough starts in September, but leading up to that had a decent year and could be a useful court sort of swing a man between, you know, starting and the bullpen, has decent stuff. Thomas Harrington, we were higher on coming into last season. There's still starter traits there, you know, former first rounder. If he can add a little bit more power, maybe add another pitch or improve a pitch, I think there's maybe a chance for him to still be, you know, a number four starter, but at the very least, I think a number five isn't unreasonable. Hunter Barco had a good year. There's always been some health concerns with him, but a lefty that has decent stuff, competes enough on the mound that, once again, like Harrington, I think you can factor into the number four, number five sort of starter range. Christian Curtis, to me, is a really interesting arm that they have. Maybe he ends up in the bullpen. Antoine Kelly is another one that had a decent year. Wilbur Dotel. They have these guys in the upper minors. Bunch of these guys.
Carmen Majinski, too, we need to mention, is another guy who should figure this as well.
Sure. Yeah. He graduated, though, right?
So he's not a prospect anymore, but I'm saying, like, but he's another guy when we talk about these teams being successful. Just again, I still want to make sure we didn't lose him because he's another guy who's had some success for them already.
Yeah. And I think, you know, is like a perfect setup guy, you know, kind of a situational reliever that can be pretty good for them. Still young, still a decent amount of control. But I think you look at all these guys, that's a lot of starter depth. All the names that I mentioned, whether they fit into, you know, eventually maybe Dotel or, you know, whoever goes into the bullpen, fine. I mean, there's still good stuff there that could play up in that role. There's guys that we can look at as number four, number five starters as soon as 2026. I think that, like, from a staff perspective, this is a very healthy group. That there's probably even some competitive teams that are pretty envious of what this rotation is going to look like. And the fact that there are those 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 options already in the system that you don't have to go out and spend, which we know the Pirates aren't going to go out and do. So I think, like, for a small market team, and it's funny, Terry Francona in an interview recently was asked about trading Hunter Green and kind of talked about, you know, the lack of an ability to go out and sign free agent starting pitching. And I think that holds true certainly with Pittsburgh. You need to be able to put together a really good rotation as a smaller market team that's not going to spend a lot of money if you do want to be competitive. It's just a matter of, do they have enough bats, Connor Griffin, you know, being the exception, to make all this work? They don't have to be, you know, an offense that's going to knock down doors, but a mid-tier offense with a you know, with decent defense and the, you know, decent fielding, which they did not have in the outfield last year, and this pitching staff, that can work.
The countdown is on and holiday shopping season is officially here. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't see anywhere else. Don't wait. The most meaningful gifts get scooped up fast, and now's the perfect time to cross names off your list. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, making every gift feel meaningful and truly one of a kind, like the NFL Game Day Bingo Set, customizable with your favorite team's colors and name, perfect for your football-loving family and friends. Not shopping for a sports fan? Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from average gardeners to home chefs. You'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. When you're shopping at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/BA2022. That's uncommongoods.com/BA2022 for 15% off. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
I want to get more into that. But before we do that, I do think we should also look at kind of the state of the system on the hitting side. And this has been the issue, right? This has been, I would say that part of when you say that this has been the issue, one of the things that really jumps out about this is the Pirates have actually, I would say, devoted a significant amount of resources in this direction. Like, I mean, this is not a team. This is a team that took Henry Davis 1-1 this decade. This is the team that took Nick Gonzalez seventh overall in 2020. This is the team that took Tamar Johnson fourth overall in 2022. Those are three top 10 picks where they devoted it to hitters. Now, there is, I would say in some cases, you could say a little bit of misfortune in that. Okay, like the Henry, they had the 1-1 pick. Some years you have the 1-1 pick and hey, they, you know, it's Paul Skeens and you say, awesome. Okay, we're making that pick. There's no question on that. Other years, you have years like 2021. And I would say in 2021, again, trying to be fair to what the time was, I don't think, Jeff, that there was a clear, undeniable number one pick. At the same time, they took the portfolio approach very much that year. I think you could comfortably say, between Jack Leiter, Jackson Jobe, Marcelo Meyer, Jordan Lawler, that those were guys who went right after and were viewed as more likely candidates to go 1-1. You had the high school shortstops, you had a college pitcher, you know, you had, I would say that those guys, you know, kind of more fit what you were expecting to see go 1-1. I would say that thankfully for the Pirates, I would say that the key part of that year is that they did, when you say, okay, they went a portfolio approach, the key part of that is at pick 72, they got Bubba Chandler. So it wasn't something where they didn't get anything out of the portfolio approach. But like this is multiple years where they've devoted significant resources in the draft to hitters. Henry Davis he's a big leaguer. At the same time, I would say at this point, the chances of him being more than one of the lesser number one picks to go in the 21st century, it's going to take a lot of work for him not to be on that category. Won't be worse, but you know there are definitely better. I would say that you know with Nick Gonzalez, at Nick Gonzalez, you're hoping now is going to be adequate starter. I mean, that's your, you know, a 1.5 to 2 WAR starter would be a positive development for him at this point. I know he played some shortstop late in the season for them last year, you know, and that's not really, I still don't think the fit for him. And in Tamar Johnson, who we talked about him on the Hot Sheet show yesterday, that but could be a regular, but at the same time, is not a top 100 prospect, is not really anywhere near the top 100 right now, I would say. And that's something where you, again, that's a top 5 pick. Is that kind of synopsis of what's happening in the organization on the hitting development side? Or when we point to that there is Connor Griffin and now there is Edward Florentino as well, is that maybe where things actually are starting to turn around, even if I just brought up a 2020, 2021, and 2022 first round pick?
Yeah, I think so. And I still don't think that, you know, the ship has sailed on Tamar Johnson being a pretty good regular. Can still get on base. Like, he still plays the game hard. I think we talked about this a little bit yesterday on the Hot Sheet show. There's still power there. I think there's some adjustments that need to be made just in terms of his setup and his approach to the game and just in terms of hitting. I think some of that stuff can be fixed. He's fine at second base. He's a pretty good base runner. He could come up and be a very solid contributor. But, you know, I think anything but saying that the Henry Davis pick at this point was a miss, even if guys behind him haven't set the world on fire. And I didn't expect the Pirates to take Jackson Merrill 1-1, right? Even though if we redrafted today, that might be.
We're not good. That's why I didn't bring it up. That wasn't in the consideration.
But I'm saying, like, there aren't a ton of guys behind that pick that have gone crazy, but still. That's kind of how bad Davis has been.
You would rather have Jack Leiter. You would rather have Jordan Lawler. You would rather have Marcelo Meyer.
Cowater. Yeah. Right on down the list. I think that's the case. But none of those guys have been like phenomenal either. It's just a matter of that's how bad Davis has been. But, you know, I do think you look at Florentino and Griffin, and credit to them, there were some changes that were made to his swing. And the team was involved in, like, implementing some of that. Obviously, all the credit at the end should go to Connor for making those adjustments. But he's a different hitter. He's a better hitter than he was. That's not something that we've seen from a pick with the Pirates. We've actually only seen the worst, and we've seen it in different demographics even. In terms of power hitters like Davis and at the college level, you know, a more pure hitter like Gonzalez at the college level, and then a pure hitter that we thought had a ton of power at the high school level that got some of the, you know, most prodigious tags and labels in terms of his hit tool and his combination of hit and power, and Tamar Johnson coming out of the amateur ranks. For that, for us to see a guy like Griffin, I think it's a really good development. It's followed by a very good breakout by Edward Florentino, who I think is hitting prospect wise, you could put him in the top 10, frankly. I think there's a lot of attributes and traits here, a little bit more risk because he's further away, sure. But really, really exciting. And I'll even give him some credit on his Merlin Valdez, who took a big step forward this year in terms of the bat to ball and getting to more of that prodigious power. And we've seen that play out all throughout the season as he reached Double A and was on that Altoona team that made a run in the playoffs. And then in the AFL, where I think up until this point, still with the, you know, final day of games today as we record, leads the league in home.
Sorry run. For Jeff's AFL fantasy team.
Oh, losing. I'm only a half point behind. So if
but you lost regular season games,
day, I'm in good shape.
They canceled regular season games, is what I'm talking about. So you lost.
All regular season games.
No, not all. They canceled, though. Tomorrow's games are off the schedule now.
All right, so. But today's are being played. Yeah,
today's are being
three games today. So I got a shot. It's a half a point. I still got a shot in my AFL fantasy leagues. First time I'm doing this. But either way, my point on Valdez, that was pretty good. The other guy that I think is interesting, and I don't know if it was a 24 pick or a 23, Deuce Gorshin. Mm-hmm. Scouts actually had some positive stuff to say about him. And he looks like a guy that could maybe be, it's probably more of a 45 profile, but the Pirates haven't done a very good job of even producing those type of guys to get that kind of depth at the major league level. So I do think there are some really positive developments for the hitting side of things, at least, you know, prospect wise in the minor leagues in the farm system coming out of 2025. If you want to put on the rose colored glasses a little bit, even if we remove Connor Griffin, there's some other good developments there. And I think some things that Pirates fans should be excited about and, you know, could ultimately really help this team in the coming years.
That's where the hope will kill you. And Pirates fans, there's a piece up at Baseball America as this goes live. I wrote, and when I was doing the research for this video and podcast, it kind of led down this road. And I'll say, like, at this point where the Pirates stand right now, and this sounds crazy to say it for a team that, as we laid out, has four winning seasons in the last 33 years. If the Pirates don't have success over the remainder of the 2020s, it'll be a truly disappointing failure, because I just really kind of started with asking the question, okay, Paul Skeens is a star, and I'm using star cutoff I used for this on this study, because you have to have some kind of cutoff, was, are you producing five WAR seasons? Use Fangraphs WAR in this case. Five WAR seasons. And Paul Skeens did that this year. Paul Skeens, if you prorate out over a full season last year, did that. So he's at that level. He's a star. I think we both feel extremely comfortable. The expectation is that Connor Griffin's going to be a star. If Connor Griffin doesn't have five WAR seasons over the remainder of the 2020s, I'll be utterly disappointed. And not only will I say that, I'll say, if you say, well, why would you say that? He's the number one prospect in baseball. The number one prospect in baseball in almost every case has those kinds of seasons. Went back and did the work on this. If you go back to 2010 and we say 2010 through 2023 number one picks, because you got to have a couple of years in the big leagues to get to that five WAR status. Those are guys who almost without fail, there are three over that time who have not reached a a 5-war season. And that's like Jurickson Profar's had a 4-win season, but he hasn't had a 5. And Andrew Benintendi had a 4-win season, didn't have a 5. Those are the misses, basically. But when you talk about guys like Ronald Acuna, and you talk about guys like Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and you talk about, and we could just go down the list, Corey Seager, Chris Bryant, a lot of these guys who produce multiple 5-war seasons. If you talk about number 2 prospects in the game, those guys also do it. Like, that's what, you know, like you're talking about Shohei Ohtani and, you know, Mike Trout and all these, like you say, like at this point, the likelihood, if you look at past history, is that, because by the way, Connor Griffin, when we say he's a number 1 prospect in the game, there are years that we've had number 1 prospects, and you're like, this isn't the best year. And then you have other years where it's like, well, we have Ronald Acuna and Shohei Ohtani and Fernando Tatis Jr. And we think all of them are basically number 1 level prospects. You have the year where you have Corbin Carroll and Adley Rutschman, or you have, you know, where you're like, These are all great.
It was Corbin and Gunnar, and then it was Julio Rodriguez, Bobby Witt Jr., and Adley.
and all of those have been 5-war players. So I would say that we are, at this point, we are expecting Connor Griffin to be a star. So the question that I then led to is okay, can a team have 2 stars and fail? And the general answer is it's really hard to. Looking at every team who had 2 5-war players in the same season from 2010 to present, and we threw 2020 out of this because it was 60-game season. Yeah. Like, it's like 14% of those teams had losing records. It's like well over half are winning 90-plus games. By the way, the Pirates only had 3 years that they've done it. You could probably guess those years, 13, 14, and 15. By the way, they had winning records all those years. McCutchen and Russell Martin and Garrett Cole. They had all 3 of those guys produce 5-war seasons in 2015. They won 98 games. So even if it's just Paul Skenes remains a star and Connor Griffin becomes a star, if you are semi-competent around that, that should get you to winning records and even postseason appearances. But what you hit on here, then if you said, hey, between Bubba Chandler and Jared Jones and Edwin Florentino and Tamar Johnson and maybe a resurrected O'Neill Cruz, or maybe, you know, we could go through a number of these guys and you say, hey, can someone else here? Okay, you don't really have to have another one of those guys become a 5-war player, but let's say that a couple of those become 3-war players as well. But especially if one of those becomes a 5-war player, there is no team since 2010 that's had 3 5-war players in a season and had a losing record. You almost can't get there. And by the way, yes, before anyone's, I know that comments, I know I can see them right now, you're writing in, what about the Angels? Because they had Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout. And this is the kind of challenging part of this, which is, but you have to sync it up. Mike Trout was the best player in baseball for the 2010s. Mike Trout was every year from the time he got up, basically, it was like you could expect a 5-war season time after time after time. He did it 8 years in a row. But there's a problem. Mike Trout's has had 1 5-war season in the 2020s. And Shohei Ohtani's greatness really kind of started around 2021. Post 2020. And so they didn't sync up. They only had 1 year where they were both 5-war players before Shohei Ohtani left. Mike Trout's injuries. This is where this could go wrong, right? Is Paul Skenes could get hurt. Connor Griffin takes longer to develop than we thought. Things like that. There are off ramps here. But I do think, Jeff, that as we look at this, there has to be a paradigm shift. And this is where ownership comes into this too. This is where the fault absolutely could be that if Bob Nutting's ownership group doesn't want to be, you know, shown to be one of the worst in baseball, it needs to, in the next few years, actually turn this into success. And what does that mean? That does not mean that all of a sudden you're going to be, you know, outbidding the Yankees and the Dodgers for the best free agent on the market. I'm not talking about that and the Mets. But this is a team that does need to start building with the understanding, I would say that 2026, a winning record is a very realistic and should be the goal for 2026. A team that has Paul Skeens, Jared Jones, Bubba Chandler, Mike, you know, Mitch Keller, you know, again, Carmen Lazinski, Braxton Ashcraft, Mike Burrows, we just laid it all out. All these guys should be able to get to a winning record. And the idea should be that you're getting to the winning record in 26 so that you can be a playoff contender in 27. Because by 27, it's not crazy to think that Connor Griffin could be a very good big league player by 27. But give him time to get settled in 26, 27. And then, by the way, if you're not a playoff team in 28 and you haven't had catastrophic injuries, something's gone wrong here. Because this team should be primed to do that. Okay. Have I just taken crazy pills there? Have I gone off the wall by saying that I think that this Pirates team should be a playoff team in the next few years?
No, I mean, like, we could sit here in 2 years and be talking about, you know, one of the best young position players in baseball. A guy that, you know, you're going to want to tune in to watch all the time. You know, I don't know if he's, it's funny because, like, I would say, like, I think he's just as exciting as like an Ellie De La Cruz. He's way more polished than an Ellie De La Cruz. Maybe there's certain things because of Ellie's height that he's not going to do. But he could steal 40 bases and hit 30 home runs and bat 300. Like, while playing a plus shortstop or a plus center field, or maybe a little bit of both. There's just not a lot of guys on earth that can do the sort of things that he can do. He's super versatile as a position player. I'd say the only more versatile player right now in the game that has the upside that he has is Shohei Ohtani, because he can pitch, right? I really do think that this is going to be one of our great number one prospects. This is a really special player, and it was apparent from the moment you saw him step on a baseball field in spring training. He was so much better than everybody else in the backfields, and you're talking about guys. There was a triple-A game next to me, and honestly, he should have been in that game. You know, just sort of toying with guys. It was the same thing in double-A. Every single time he came up, he was phenomenal. You know, I think that, you know, overall, you sort of look at a player like that. We talked about Skeens being the best pitcher in the world. That combination should work. And there's enough around in the pitching staff. I think there's some interesting position prospects coming up. If they can honestly just kind of fill this roster with a bunch of 50s and all those other roles, I think they probably have something. If they can have 45s and 50s, and because they don't have that now. They have a lot of 30s that saw a lot of full-time reps in Pittsburgh last year.
And that's where, like, if you say where, like, that's where you say, like, the ownership and all this, like, this is a team that currently has almost no financial obligations. And by the way, I do think that you could get creative here, right? We've talked about, I think it's worth, you could be trading Mitch Keller this offseason, potentially, and not because the Pirates are cheap and the Pirates are idiots and the Pirates just don't ever want to pay anybody. It's reasonable to say, if we can turn Mitch Keller into a regular position player who's a solid player, take your pitching depth and try to fix, you have multiple holes. Like, if we're saying right now, we just laid it out, the Pirates have four catchers in contention to be their catcher. You could argue they have Davis, we talked about, they have Joey Bart, they have Andy Rodriguez, and they have Rafael Flores, they just acquired from the Yankees. Four, to go back to the old NFL adage, if you have four quarterbacks, you probably have no quarterbacks. They need to go from having four to, like, we have a guy, or at least we have two, right? Okay, that. But let's just say that that's at least, there's enough candidates there that they're there at catcher. Spencer Horwitz, maybe he's their first baseman. Maybe he's their DH. Maybe he's a little bit more of a multi-position player. But that's like, first base is a position they could upgrade. Second base, you kind of hope is going to be Tamar Johnson by 2027. Maybe it's Nick Gonzalez. Again, Jared Triolo, if you wanted to, could probably play almost anywhere in the infield. But, like, okay, but these are all positions where you could say, if the right moves out there, maybe you improve. Okay, shortstop, whoever, you could put Triolo there at the start of the year, but shortstop is Connor Griffin's. I would say you don't want him in center. You want him at shortstop. More of an impact there, but whatever. Connor Griffin, let's just write that in. Third base could be Triolo. He's good defensively. Again, not that you can't, this is not a five war player, but he's decent. Then the outfield, we don't know, you know, with Brian Reynolds, unfortunately, looks like he's kind of a little bit in the decline phase of his career, but he's signed long-term. You're probably going to have him in one spot. O'Neill Cruz, I think, needs to go to a corner and say, okay, the defense, the tools do not match the defense that you're getting, but hopefully then you improve, you get an offensive improvement out of him, or maybe he's a guy who you challenge trade to somewhere. There needs to be some more positional, you know, I would say that they don't need to go out there and sign a lot of 35-year-olds in the tail end of their career, but they could use a couple of players. Like, I think that this is where it's time for the Pirates also to be creative this way and say, like, look around baseball. Where is there someone who either is young, early in their big league career, but not like a prospect who's 3 years away, but like, okay, can we find a guy who fits what we need, who we can get at a reasonable cost, right? I know you mentioned, I think we were talking before, like that maybe sign Josh Naylor as a free agent, for example.
That would probably be the top of their market. I don't know how much money he's going to get, but it's still a first baseman. He's 29. Like, I can't imagine it's going to break the bank. Like, does he get $100 million? I don't know. I mean, I'd have to look at what the projections are that Ellie put out. But, you know, I think that's – and you're also spending so little. Like, I think that's sort of decent money. You also need some guys like that are kind of fiery, that want to win. You know he's going to be productive. He's a really good base runner in addition to being able to hit, being able to play the field. You can pop him into a corner outfield spot if you really need to, but probably don't want to. But he's fine at first base. You then kind of move Spencer Horowitz, who is a decent bat, to DH. He can fill in at first base sometimes. He can fill in a corner outfield spot where he's okay. Like, I think that makes, you know, Horowitz a little bit more attractive, even like within that lineup. And like, okay, he's not like our everyday first baseman. We can move him around and use him a little bit more situationally. I think they sort of have to attack it from that angle. I think somebody who can stabilize their outfield defense too, where you can put him in center field, move O'Neill Cruz out to left field because he just hasn't been a very strong outfielder, and then Reynolds patrols right, and that's fine. That would make a big difference. There were a lot of balls that got dropped in that outfield last year that shouldn't have. Just talking with Pirates fans, watching a couple of the games, the game that I was there, the outfield defense was terrible all throughout that game. And that was just one snapshot in September. I think that's a bit of an issue. The infield defense could be a little bit better as well, especially with the pitching behind them. Just kind of improving those areas in the margin, finding like good run prevention, which is something that they haven't spent a lot of time on in recent years. I think that sort of stuff could go a long way as well. We're not asking them to break the bank and bring in a bunch of sluggers or do any of that stuff. I think just all around ball players that can contribute little bits on all sides of the ball, base running, defense, you know, getting on base and hitting for a little bit of power. I think all that stuff would go a long way. They don't have to go out and sign Pete Alonso and all sort of things. Those are unrealistic expectations. But I think some of these mid-tier free agents sort of make sense, and it's the right time for them to do it. And it's, I'll say this too, just last thing I'll throw out. This is a town where we see how the fan base comes out for the Steelers. We've seen how they've come out for the Penguins over the years. When I was in Altoona, which isn't too far away, a couple hours, but kind of that general Pittsburgh area, that fan base was, that place was packed for a playoff. That you don't necessarily see a lot of double A, even playoff games that are packed like that. It's all fans and in Pirate stuff, Skeen stuff. You saw that, you know, throughout the ballpark. I think it's a fan base that if they tap into it more, they're going to get better attendance numbers. They'll make more money. You know, I don't know what all the economics are of it, but even for a small market team, I think they could be more of a mid-market team if they really wanted to put some money into the product, because, you know, we've seen that town come out for other teams and support other teams and have a lot of success. I don't think it's crazy to think that they could spend a little bit more, and with some of the talent that they have a really good run of like 3 to 4 years here of success.
I think, again, other names I will throw out there, like a Willie Castro, who was going to be kind of a second to third tier free agent, but has multi-positional versatility and can hit a little bit, or, you know, again, maybe they're the landing spot for Luis Arraez. I don't think that there's a whole lot of landing spots out there for Luis Arraez. He is only 29 still. And in this lineup, if he could just hit and play solid defense at first base, he would be an improvement. He would be like, you don't need him to hit for power. You will hope he could do a little bit more than he did last year, but you don't need him to. You've got other guys to do that. They don't have, like, again, we don't want Kutch is great. Andrew McCutchen's incredible, but Andrew McCutchen should not be your best pure hitter in your lineup when he's 37. That's kind of been the case in a lot of times. So they can get creative here. Potentially they have pitching depth. They can get creative here in some ways if they want, because they do have prospects. Although again, I don't want to trade a whole lot of prospects for big leaguers yet on this team, because there's still, I think that you need to start bringing in some veterans now to help set the stage. But this is a team that really, the ingredients are there for them to pop in 27, in 2028. It's only, and we're going into 2026. So with that to be said, I think there's a lot here to dive into. I think there's actual reasons to be optimistic. I think it could largely be summarized as, if you have one of the best pitchers in baseball, which Paul Skeens is, and you have the best prospect in baseball, who's going to be in the big leagues in 2026, barring injury, It's hard to not have that turn into something. It's the Pirates. We'll see. But Jeff, like, what do you think? Like, again, if you, truth serum being pumped through you, is this team a playoff team in the next 3 years?
You know, I think like the foundation is there. So I want to say yes. I just have such a low amount of confidence in the ownership of doing the right things to make all that come to fruition. But, you know, I think it's better than 50% just based on Skeens, some of the pitching that they have, Connor Griffin and a couple other guys, and just maybe a couple of lucky things, just breaking guys that got enough playing time over these last couple of years coming through. But I think, you know, I'd like to see them operate a little bit differently, be a little bit more aggressive on the waiver wire, doing some of those things that we saw from, you know, teams like the Orioles, as they kind of made that jump from a really bad run of years, top draft picks, talent in the farm system. Those guys matriculate and they were able to kind of backfill and find some pieces that work. Even a guy like Ryan Ahern, like, they sort of need to find some players like that. They need to sign some minor league free agents and develop them, and guys that turn into decent pieces like a Ernie Clement or Nathan Lucas, you know, somebody like that.
I will throw out a version of that that they actually just did. Dugan Darnell, who they just picked up from waivers from the Rockies. Intriguing arm. I like that arm. Like, I think this is the guy who, he actually was in the big leagues for the Rockies last year. Don't know why he was waived. He was waived at the time when the Rockies didn't have a Pobo, but that's, again, good name. Good. Those are the kind of moves that the Pirates should be making. We're trying to keep this to 20 minutes, 25 minutes. It's ended up being 45 because there's a lot here, but yes, we have actual reason for optimism. And I would say I expect the Pirates to make the playoffs in the next three seasons. That's not a, for most teams, that would be a pretty modest wish, because there are a lot more playoff spots now. But next three seasons, Pirates back in the playoffs. And I would say without a doubt, next three seasons, we're going to see winning records of Pirates. If they don't, it will be an utter failure, because you've got Paul Skeens, you've got Jared Jones, Bubba Chandler, and you got the number one prospect in baseball. And again, like you said, Jeff, if Connor Griffin, like, look at what Bobby Witt Jr. has done for the Royals. That's the way I would put it. He raised the sea level of that Royals team. That's a Royals team that went to the playoffs 2 years ago. They had a winning record this year. That's, again, you want to do more than that. But when you have that kind of, like, we're just writing in our shortstop in the middle of the lineup, who we expect to produce 7-8 WAR in a normal year, it makes everything else so much better. And that's what the Pirates could have coming before long. Hope you enjoyed this. Do like and subscribe, leave comments, and we will try to respond to them. For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.